You're listening to Selling the Dream. This isn't an interview, and we're not journalists. But each week, we'll ask our guests to open up and share their secrets to business success. Let's have a conversation and have some fun.
Welcome everybody, to Selling the Dream podcast. Myself, Ken Jordan, with Round Point Mortgage, and of course, my co-host, my partner in crime, Mr. Joe Iredell. What's up, Joe?
How's it going, KJ?
Not bad, not bad. What's your connectivity over there, brother? Because mine doesn't look like it's great. You getting a clear picture of me?
I'm getting, you're all right. You're fine. Yeah, it's actually better.
Right. Is it better that it's grainy?
Yeah, that's fine.
So what's new?
Not much, man. Just get really busy with I feel like a lot of businesses did really well last year. And now that they have this huge pile of money they're sitting on and kind of bracing for things to tighten up next year, and they're trying to figure out ways to spend it before they have to give it to Uncle Sam. So we've been, our phone's been ringing off the hook for a lot of development projects, marketing plans, you know, all the web stuff that goes into making yourself more visible when less people are searching for you. So that's where we've been for the past couple of weeks. So hopefully that keeps rolling and we can, you know, save some people from struggling next year.
What's the weather like out in California?
It's always sunny in Philadelphia, but it's always beautiful here, man.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. Yeah. So I heard two new terms this week that I thought were pretty interesting. One is dry snitching. Have you heard that term?
I'm familiar. Come on, dude. You know what that dry snitching.
I'm not saying I've never seen it. I just didn't know there was a term for it.
No, it's when you tell on somebody that, like, it doesn't have any benefit to you whatsoever. Like, you're not implicated at all. You just tell on somebody just for the sake of telling on somebody. That's a dry snitch.
I read this article. Jeremy Roenick and Michael Jordan are out golfing, right? And as Jeremy Roenick's telling the story, they did an early morning round. Roenick beat him for like a grand. And then Jordan's like, let's play again, because he's a degenerate gambler and he can't help himself. So Roenick says, all right, they go double or nothing. They grab a couple Coors Lights and he's got a game that night, right? So there's dry snitch number one. He's drinking on game day, right? So Roenick continues to tell the story. He goes around, they get through the second round and Roenick beats him again. And now he's up two grand or whatever the number was. So Jordan says to him, what's that?
I'm sure it was more than just 2 grand, but continue.
Made up numbers, right? But he says to him, I'll tell you what, I bet you tonight's game, I score 40 and we win by more than 20. And Roenick says, yeah, you're on. So sure enough, Jordan goes on to win. They went on to score 43 and they won by 26 or something like that. And I'm thinking to myself, did Roenick just dry snitch on Jordan for gambling on sport that he was playing in? That's on top of telling they were drinking before the game? I mean, isn't that what got Pete Rose in trouble?
I don't know how much time we have to kind of go through each of those situations, but it's a form of dry snitch. It's not in its truest sense, that's not really, you know. But I'm glad you learned a new word, Ken. That's good.
I'm always striving for knowledge.
Say, learn a new word every day, and you'll always be filled with knowledge.
Have you heard the term toxic positivity?
Yeah. Dude, I'm on the internet all day, man. I breathe this stuff. I make up words. Sometimes I'll make up my own word. I'll just put it out there and see if people like you are talking about it. So,
what is it?
Toxic positivity? It's a situation where you have somebody who's like overly positive to the sense that like they block out negative things. So then when you actually have something bad happen to you, then you don't realize that that's a normal way of life. You just assume that everything is always positive. So you don't know how to deal with the negatives. That's toxic positivity.
Interesting.
Keep them coming, man. I learn a word a day too. I feel like I'm a couple of days ahead of you on this. You got to stump me, dude.
So for me, positivity is huge. It's important. It's a big part of, you know, making sure that, you know, you're constantly controlling the conversation that you're having with yourself and propelling yourself forward into, you know, achieving your goals. And I'm having a hard time finding that delineation point between, you know, positivity in the face of adversity and challenge and struggle and all this other stuff and this term, toxic positivity, it makes it feel like, okay, people who are constantly striving to be positive are all of a sudden bad or toxic or bad for the environment. I don't know. What the hell?
No, man. It's all about keeping it real. They're not keeping it real, dude. You got to keep it real. So you can be positive, but you can't be toxic positive where you don't see, you know, that it's not all roses. And in order to get positive, there's a yin and a yang and everything like that. So that's where that comes into play. So you don't appreciate the highs if you don't experience the lows.
All right. So I can get behind that. That makes more sense to me. I just got really offended when I heard the term. I was by myself. I don't know why I got so offended.
You'll be on your way. You're good. You know?
just super offended, man. Unbelievable.
You just go dry snitch on those toxic positivators.
And that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Positivator.
I don't think that's a word.
I just made it, bro. You're gonna ask somebody about it next week.
Real quick, Eagles won last week big. They beat a really bad team. Next week, Chargers, your neck of the woods. What are they going to do?
They're going to play football, and one team's going to show up. We don't know which one that's going to be. But at this point, I think the strategy is to lose out and get a good draft pick.
Get a good draft pick?
Yeah, dude. Come on.
I don't think we need to worry about it. We just need Carson Wentz to play 75% of the snaps in Indianapolis. And how we finish is not going to impact anything. The difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team, unless you really stink, the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team is only about 4 or 5 spots in the draft. So I don't know why we would tank rather than try and build some momentum into next year and hope for that first-round pick.
Yeah, well, because it's not the pick. It's the equity that comes with the pick that you can trade off to build around. So it's not one person. If you have the first-round pick, then you can trade that first-round pick for a multitude of B players and get them to A players. And that's how you build a dynasty.
Okay. Dynasty building Joe. All right, well, let's get into some of the stuff we're here to talk about today, which is selling, success, and motivation. As always, we want to be, you know, honest with ourselves, honest with each other, no toxic positivity. And we want to make sure that we're having a good time and we don't take ourselves too seriously. And that's an important part of our presentation, of our podcast. And we always make sure our guests are aware, too, because we don't need anybody coming in here, you know, trying to be super serious. It just harshes my vibe. I know it harshes Joe's vibe. And when I met Shelly, I knew she would be a perfect guest for her. So I want to introduce Shelly O'Donovan from the Authentic Influence Group. Shelly, welcome to Selling the Dream.
Thank you. Thanks. I can't wait to play with you guys. You were talking a little bit about lying there, so we can delve into that even. I can give you some tips and tricks.
Awesome. So I want to start with salespeople. Okay. So we have to read other people's behaviors in order to determine if we're making that connection, right? Because the most effective salesperson is typically the most effective communicator, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So in order to communicate, you gotta be putting ideas and notions out there and then make sure that they're hitting their target. And when they're not, you gotta be aware of that. So what are some things that salespeople need to be doing? And then also what are some things that salespeople need to be paying attention to ensure that they're hitting their targets?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is pay attention to the person on the other side, right? Pay attention to that person that you're selling to. And so often we sit there and we're so thoughtful about what we're going to say and what's the next question I'm going to ask in my sales conversation and how am I going to, you know, and so you're kind of listening, but you're still going through this exercise of what you're going to say and what you're going to do. And while you're doing that, you're totally missing what's coming, all the cues and signals that are coming out of the other person. So the first thing is listening, not only with your ears, but with your eyes. So really watching that person and trying to see what they're doing, how they're reacting to the different things you're saying as well.
So there's two kinds of two schools of thought when it comes to selling. One is selling is a negotiation. It's, selling is I have an idea, you know, it's either got value or it doesn't have value. My job is to increase the value of my idea so that then you in turn give me something of value in return in exchange for the idea, product, so on and so forth. And the better the idea, the higher value you bring, the higher price maybe you can get for that idea and or product. Whereas other people look at selling as an enrollment game. you know, where we have to enroll people in an idea, and that our job isn't to necessarily negotiate with them, but really enroll them in doing that which you're asking them to do, which is buy the product, take the time, set the appointment, you know, do business with you, whatever it has, whatever it may be. What school of thought are you from, Shelly? Where do you see in those two worlds? Which one do you think is more relevant to today's business world?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I come at sales from the perspective of it's a relationship. At the end of the day, if I want to sell you my services, so certainly as a business owner, I'm a salesperson. I wear that hat often. And so if I want to sell you my services, first, I have to build that relationship with you. So it's not a one and done kind of deal. I'm not going in and pitching immediately, but I'm trying to build that trust. And so trust to me is really at the core of a relationship, because you can have the best product in the world. You have, you know, be selling the best car on the lot, but if you can't build that trust with that customer, they're going to take their business somewhere else. And so that becomes really key.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I think that breaking it down to those two trains of thoughts, there's a third, because I don't feel like I fit exactly into either of those categories. And I've been on both sides of like high pressure, you know, boiler room type sales. And then, you know, the other side of it, kind of where I feel like I'm now. And like, I feel that 99% of sales, at least in my experience, is just a discovery process. Like when you're not at a quota and you're not like, hey, I have to hit my numbers, I have to sell this to this person, then you actually have the luxury to be able to figure out if what you're trying to sell is really a good fit. And the only way to do that is to open up and say, you know, again, like as Shelly said, like, listen, like, and a lot of times when you take that approach, you figure out like, and sales managers hate when you say this to salespeople, but sometimes it's not a good fit. And if you try to cram it in there, you lose the trust. You get somebody who got sold, and, you know, the long term isn't good. So, you know, for me, it's preparation, it's discovery. It's, do they really actually need this? Is this going to make them better than before I found them? And I think there's kind of a third fit in there for a sales process.
I agree with you, Joe. I agree. You know, so when you're talking about the discovery process, that's your opportunity to determine if your product and or service is going to fit their needs. Like you said, maybe they're not always a good fit. But once you get to that point, all you've done is convince yourself that that's a good fit. Now, as a salesperson, your job is then to convince them. Right. And to enroll them in the idea that this is a good fit. So I still think that lends itself more to the enrollment philosophy when it comes to selling in general. You know, you remember Scott Bailey, Shelly, if you don't, he's a friend of ours from way back. We were Yellow Page salesmen together, all three of us, actually. And one of my early days, I was riding with Scott Bailey, and he says to me, all right, now I just got out of training. I'm excited, wide eyed, ready to crush it. Sell an ad to every person. He says, all right, let me ask you a question. Would every business benefit from a Yellow Page ad? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, no, the answer's no. Not everybody is going to benefit from a Yellow Page ad. And he goes on to tell me all the different companies that don't need Yellow Pages. And whether it was right or wrong, he convinced himself of that, right? He convinced himself that not everybody needs it. Now, I feel like that is the first sale that's always made. So without any discovery, he was convincing himself that this person doesn't need the product, and he has already sold himself right out of the picture, you know. So whether you're enrolling yourself or you're enrolling other people, I feel like, again, it's still all an enrollment game. Now, Shelly, when you're in front of someone, and if you have, I don't want to jump ahead, Joe, if you wanted to add to that.
No, that's a good perspective for sure.
So Shelly, you need to build that trust early. Is there a hack, and I hate to call it a hack, but is there something that salespeople really should be doing very early on in a conversation, whether over the phone or in person, to build that trust? What are some of those things they can do?
Yeah. So first of all, if it's on the phone, because I do know that sometimes that's where the first impression is built. So your first impression happens within the first 20 seconds of someone seeing you. So we were, before the recording, we were talking about Wawa, which is a coffee chain here. And so if I'm on my way to meet someone and they accidentally see me when I'm getting a cup of coffee at Wawa, even though they don't know that I'm the person that's going to be in front of them in a few minutes, that first impression has been set. So if I'm fumbling getting my coffee, that's a problem, right? So the first impression is really important. If it's on the phone, you want to take control of your voice tone. So there are studies that show that the higher the voice tone, the less we trust folks. So as you can imagine, as a woman, we typically have higher range of voice tone. So you want to try to pull your tone down and you want to play with that tone. Also, when you're on the phone, just making sure that your voice is very clear, concise. I was working with two realtors once and they were telling me that they like to talk to their clients while they're walking on their cell phones. You can hear that, right? I can hear that you're walking. I can hear that you're moving. And so I had them call each other and talk to one another and they were like blown away by how they could hear that and just how distracting it actually was to the person on the other end. So those are little tweaks for kind of being on the phone. The other thing is hands are our trust indicators. So this goes back to kind of when we were cavemen and I was walking down the dirt path and I'd see you. And the first thing I'm going to look for is your hands because I want to know if you have a weapon or not. And so even though we don't do this looking for weapons typically anymore, subconsciously, our brains still look for that. And so if you are talking to a client for the first time and your hands are on your lap the whole time because you're at lunch and you're trying to be use the good manners your parents taught you, then that's going to impact the trust that you're building with that client.
Wow, that's wild. So hands, the first thing you learn. Imagine test it out, Joe. Next time you go meet somebody, just put your hands behind your back.
My takeaway from that is to no longer bring weapons to sales calls. So
there you go.
I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Peter, you thought it was your tie they didn't like.
No, that's wow. That's pretty
shiv.
No, I mean, it makes sense though. You figure, you know, there's so many nonverbal cues that people pick up on, and you know, there's like games you can play where you can, you know, communicate without using words and stuff like that. And it's, you know, the human perception is so great, and there's so many subtle things that you don't even realize are happening. So that's really solid information. And I think that inherently we all know, but to bring it to the forefront and put it in, you know, the front part of your brain, be like, oh, wow, I guess that's a gem. Thanks, Shelly.
Yeah. And that's the one point I'll make is that we all do a lot of these things subconsciously and don't even realize that we are reading the room in some way. But once you start to really learn it in a more conscious way, you can control what you're putting out so that if you're nervous about something, so you're not leaking out those nerves as much. Or on the flip side, you can start to really read people a little bit more and try to figure out exactly what's happening in a room that's not being said verbally, but that is being communicated still.
Spidey sense.
Yes.
When we were talking a little bit before this, I got the impression you're kind of like a human lie detector. Can you kind of shed some color on that?
Yeah. So I've just really delved deep into lie detection and body language in particular. So there's a big science behind it. And after studying for a long time, I'm pretty good at reading lies and knowing if people lie. That said, we all lie constantly. And so I want to make that clear as well. There's no one on this planet that's 100% honest. And we tell all sorts of lies, right? You tell the lie to your significant other that, you know, the outfit looks great on them because you don't want the fight, right? But you also might tell the bigger lie.
I've never said that lie, but go ahead.
Of course you haven't. So, you know, we lie all the time. We lie to ourselves too. And sometimes, you know, we lie about how we're feeling about something. And so you can learn cues to pick up that lie detection. The interesting thing about it though, is that you have to really look closely. And it takes a lot of learning and it takes a lot of time. And it takes a lot of looking at what's happening in the environment as well, because I could flash you like an angry micro expression and you might think that I'm angry about something that you did, but in actuality, right, my dog just like barked up and hopped behind the camera and I was nervous about that. So you really have to know what's happening in the context of the situation as well.
So let's talk about lying then for a minute. What are some of the things that they always say when you look to your right or you look to your left? What's the deal with that? Is that true?
Not true. No, you might or Joe might, but we don't know. So Here's the thing. When you really are trying to figure out if somebody's lying, the first thing that we do is try to baseline them. And so by baselining somebody, what I would do is just have a conversation with them. I would ask them a couple of questions that would make them just a little bit uncomfortable, not completely uncomfortable that they would lie to me about it, but enough that I could pick up some cues from them. Those are kind of their nervous cues. And then when I would go in to ask them questions that maybe they might actually lie about, they would typically change their behavior enough. And once you learn body language, you can really watch that like a hawk. And when you launch the question that you're really dying to know the answer, if they're going to lie about, then you usually see something. And then there's also a number of cues that are statistically significant cues that liars tend to do. They're not always lying cues, though. And some people have those cues as like their baseline normally. So that's what you have to really figure out. And once you learn lie detection, you can get up to like a 92% accuracy rate, which is very close to an electronic lie detector.
That's scary. I will tell you.
Well, it is.
So my big takeaway here is I'm never, ever playing poker with Shelly.
Yes, exactly. And funny thing, since I've learned this, I haven't even tried to play poker. So I'm thinking maybe I need to head that direction soon.
Absolutely.
I don't want to say Rain Man situation, but if you, me and Kenny would love to take you to either Atlantic City or out to Vegas.
Awesome, yeah.
A little social experiment.
We got to monetize this skill. How crazy is it?
For the buffet. Yeah.
How crazy is it, Shelly, though, having this knowledge, it's got to be a little bit of a burden.
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Yeah, so it is a burden. So one time I was going to a party. I'd been in New York at a big event that I had to be dressed up for, and I'm going to a party later that afternoon. And it was kind of a more like low-key thing, like show up in jeans, but I didn't have time to change. And I remember walking in, and the looks I got from some of the other women in the room were like, oh, like, why are you dressed up? And these kind of, you know, and I just caught these like angry micro expressions, and it really took me back. Because you can't, once you learn body language and you learn these cues, you can't always unsee them. Like, I'm not always looking in particular for something out of someone, but if you do something that really perks me up, then I spot it and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that person's lying to me about that. So it is a blessing and a curse all at once.
I feel like it's that, you know, I forget what movie it was where the main character could hear all the thoughts of the people they were like, I don't want that. I don't want to know. Ignorance is bliss. Yeah. You know, you tell me I'm a good guy, I'm going to take your word for it. I don't want to know you hate me.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, you know, the best people that do lie detection are very like honest in their hearts, and so they will continue to push for more information to really dig in to what they need to know so that they can really know for sure that there is a lie there. So I often will just say to myself, well, maybe I saw something wrong, or maybe, and I won't delve deeper because I don't necessarily want to know that about somebody, right? But some of those cues can be really important. So for example, this is the cue, like putting your hand up to your forehead is a cue for shame. So if you're going in to meet with a client and their hand goes up like this and you're talking about something, a couple things. Like, first of all, if it's price, maybe they don't have the money to pay you and they're feeling that. Or if that goes up when you're talking about something else, like another company or another client or there's something there and you do not want that shame, that thought that they have of shame linked to you. So you want to get off that topic as soon as you can. And so that's something that can really help to open up kind of a more positive engagement. Because you were talking about positivity at the start of the podcast. And the one thing you can do is to kind of positively prime people. And you can do that by, when you're going into an engagement with a client, making sure that you start off with something positive. Like, if it's raining, don't be like, oh, it's so cold and wet and rainy today. You might be like, oh, wasn't it interesting the way the rain was pouring on the window? It almost created like a melody. Or, you know, you're just priming them with positive, because then they link that to you and they have a more positive impression of you.
So I'm just happy enough to water my flowers, you know, thrilled, pumped. So positively toxic about it. Right. Shelly, can you do a lie detector test on Joe?
I'm impervious to lies.
Are you down? Sure. All right, let's do it.
Okay. So first tell me something that's true. Actually, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
And then I'm going to ask you to tell me two things, and one is true and one is a lie, and I will see if I can spot it. So I will tell you that since we're on a podcast, hopefully my spidey sense is up, but we will try this out. So, Joe, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Okay. And now tell me one lie and one truth.
Okay, let's see. One lie and one truth. They're not going to be in that order, just so you know. I'm not going to make that easy for you. So, or maybe they are. I don't know about that either. All right. So here we go. One lie and one truth. Let's see. One lie and one truth. Okay. I drive a Mercedes and I have 5 kids.
Boy, you're tough. Do it one more time. Say them for me again.
I drive a Mercedes and I have 5 kids.
So I think that you drive a Mercedes. Am I wrong? Is it the kids?
I have 5 children.
Ages the hardest part about that, Shelly, is that someone out there wanted to have 5 children with him. That's the crazy part. It's like, all right, there's no way you got 5 kids.
They all have different moms. They all have different moms. That's a lie.
No, I know. I can tell that.
Married to my wonderful wife, and we have 5 beautiful children.
Nice. Together. Oh, nice.
And so I don't drive a Mercedes.
You don't drive a Mercedes. So for you,
I don't know.
Well, and it's funny. So with you, what I was watching was your eyebrows. And so I noticed that your eyebrows lifted up a little bit when you said about the kids. And so that's what I thought was maybe your tell.
This guy's a master.
Yes.
No. Well, see, this type of the body language and the cues that it fascinates me. So I've studied a little bit. So maybe I did a little judo on you. Maybe there was a little counter intelligence there.
Who knows? Counter, yeah, exactly.
Next time we're going to catch you off guard, Joe.
You never know.
Next time I'm just going to go, are you vaccinated? And then I'm just going to watch your response and see.
How much
a dry snitch.
Before taxes, how much you need to cheat out of a can?
We're going to dry snitch later. Oh, I had a great podcast today. With my friend Joe, who's not vaccinated.
Kenny voted for Joe Biden. Dry snitch.
Oh, man. There it is. So that was great. But let's move on to another topic here that I know you're an expert in, and that is personality profiling.
Yeah.
Tell me about the 5 person. Was it the Big 5 personality
test? Big 5. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So Big 5, or sometimes it's called OCEAN, is really personality. It's the 5 types, and every other personality test is actually based on the Big 5. So there's tons of academic research on it. It's very globally applicable as well. And what I like about it is it's super easy to spot, not only in yourself, but in other people. And so that makes you really easy to read other people and read their personalities. So the first, O is for openness, and that's how open you are to new ideas. C is conscientiousness, how conscientious you are, how you organize things. E is extroversion, so how extroverted you are. A is agreeable, so how agreeable you are to things, how willing you are to just go along with the flow. And then N is for neuroticism, and it gets a bad rap, but it's really just how you approach worry. So people who are a little more on the neurotic side, they tend to be worriers, but they're also great people to put in kind of in charge of looking at the future, because they will see what roadblocks could actually come down the pike way before they do. But during a crisis, you kind of have to pull them out because they can't usually handle. There's too much worry there, and they get caught up in that.
So what did you say E was?
So E is extroversion. So how extroverted or introverted you are.
I was trying. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you said something else. So go ahead.
Uh-oh.
All right. So open.
That was your nickname in high school, wasn't it?
I guess I can't really lie, can I?
Well, apparently you can.
C is conscientious. E is extroversion. A is
agreeableness.
Agreeable and yeah. is
neurotic.
What is that?
Oh, and it's neurotic. So okay. that's the worry. And
so how can we use that information, like that personality profile, quickly to assess not only how are people going to respond to us, but right. I think it's important, you know, that the phrase meet people where they are. I'm not a huge fan of that phrase, but you have to treat people the way they need to be treated, right? So you need to know your personality profile in order to address them a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you will see this. Like usually the extroverts, you know them because they're thinking outside of they're thinking verbally all the time. So that's why they're constantly talking. Whereas like an introvert is thinking about that in their head. And so when they put a message out, it's usually a really well-delivered packaged message because it's not the thought process that's coming out, where an extrovert it usually is. So that's one place. And extroverts sometimes overwhelm introverts. And extroverts sometimes don't understand, like, why can't this person just talk to me? Like, why am I doing all the talking, right? So those are two places. And you can certainly dial up your personality in different places for those things. So on the other side end of it, openness. So knowing that someone who's not very open, they might be the client that needs to meet you at the same place, at the same coffee shop, who's going to buy the same cup of coffee when you meet. Like they just like things to be very precise. They're not open to new experiences. Don't ask them to go to the newest restaurant. Yeah.
So, all right, let me ask you this then. And I know, how about, do people change their personality profile depending on their stress level in a given moment? And is there typically a correlation?
Yeah, so we can shift up our personalities, but some of it is genetically wired, and it depends a little bit on the personality trait, but most of them are at least 40-some percent up to 60% wired. So for example, we talked about neurotics. They actually are wired to not get that serotonin as quickly as people who are not neurotic. So it's wired in there. So there is a tweak that you can make for sure. And in a stressful situation, you are going to revert back to kind of what your core is. And that's going to really come out. But it's also really important to just tweak that, you know, tweak it to the extent that you need to in certain situations. But you're never going to completely change your personality unless you go through some incredible transformation in your life. You know, you have some life altering experience, then that may do it. But otherwise, you're just going to be able to dial up or dial down.
So people, you know, when, especially, I guess, in a sales environment, people's defenses tend to be up. So will you see them kind of shift down any like the openness spectrum, as opposed to kind of if they're at the bar having fun with their friends?
Yeah, you would possibly. And then the other thing, you can pull the body language back into the personality. And someone who's open, you know, they're usually their body language is kind of open as well. But when somebody's closed off to an idea, like you launch, you know, your sales product and they're not interested, they're going to do blocking behavior. So they might cross their arms. They might, you know, they might do that shame thing to kind of block, or they might put their phone in front of them or something like that. And they're really blocking that out because they're not interested. And so, you know, someone who's agreeable, on the other hand, they actually may tell you, yes, I'm all in, sign me up. And then 10 minutes later, they're like, why did I say that? And they're calling you back and saying, listen, I don't, because they just can't help themselves because they're so agreeable. And I personally know about this one because I top out at the highest at agreeable. And so I have to put things in my, you know, in my repertoire to say, like, I will get back to you in a few hours about that, because otherwise I say yes, and then I don't really want to do the thing. And then I have a fight with myself, right?
Yeah, it's important, especially for people who are agreeable. They end up over scheduled, overtired, overcommitted, because they don't know how to say no. And it comes back to, you know, to haunt them. I think there's obviously some benefits to that personality trait as well. And I think I'm agreeable as well. And I find that I, you know, it gets me, you know, helps with influence, but it also hurts with time management. It hurts with, you know, boundaries. It hurts with a lot of stuff, you know?
The good thing about agreeable people, though, they're great to work with. And everybody usually likes to work with them because they're easier to work with. They're willing to bend. They're willing to look at things in a different way.
I've found, like, because I've had a lot of agreeable people that work for me and so forth. And one of the things that, and I'm not an agreeable person, I am to an extent, but I'm definitely kind of draw the line type of person. But agreeable people, what I found has kind of helped them is you can still agree, but you can change the trajectory of what you're agreeing to. So if someone asks like, hey, can you do this for me? You say, yeah, I can help you. Not necessarily that, but I'll help you in this. And it kind of helps delegate the time and resources and things like that, where, you know, it still serves their fulfillment to be agreeable, but it doesn't put them to the fire that this needs to get done because I just said I'd do, you know, specific task A or B or whatever. So that's something that I learned a while back, which helped.
One of the things I've learned too when I'm working with people, especially over the phone, is that I found that silence brings out who they really are. I think that most salespeople, we have a tendency to just talk and talk and talk. And we talk over cues. We talk over opportunities for the buyer, for the customer client to tell you what they need you to know about them. And, you know, silence is typically only awkward for one person. You know, one person usually appreciates the silence. The other person usually, you know, feels awkward. I know silence for me is awkward. And it's a struggle for me to ask a question and actually give my client the time to answer. Because almost I want to finish their sentence for them. I want to give them the answer. You know, let's move on. But that silence is an important part to let them give you the answer, but also tell you how they need to be communicated with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I will tell your listeners is that people love to talk about themselves. So if you want to be likable, like let the other person tell you about themselves. And suddenly people are like, wow, boy, she's just so great to talk to. And it's not because they're listening to you. It's because they've talked about themselves and they like that, right? And so if you can give them, you know, little cues to validate what they're saying, and you can also get so much more information. So one trick for getting more information is that if you turn your head to the side, it's this universal sign for, did you hear that? And folks will talk 3 to 4 times longer than they were if you do that. And so that is great in negotiations. It's great in closing sales because you get more information from them when you do that.
So how's it going? It's just like this?
So tilt your head kind of naturally.
Yeah, you're a dog, right, Kenny? Dogs are great at it.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, and then if you shake your head as well, and you can do this tilting or not, 3 times slowly, that gets people to talk more as well. 3 times fast is hurry up. I want to get out of here. So when you start to see that from somebody else, you know, they're kind of done with what you're saying, at least that part of the conversation, if not you in general.
What about a pinky on the corner of your mouth? Like,
no, that's a good one. I don't know. That's very pensive. So I will tell you, though, a lick of the lips means that I want something on the other side. So sometimes we see this in dating cues, but we also see it in sales. Because once I've decided I'm going to buy your product, I might lick my lips and I'm sitting and it's a cue that I'm like ready. I'm ready to purchase.
Interesting. And that goes back to the caveman days too, right?
Jeez. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it could also be just, I have dry lips. So be careful about that. If somebody's doing it the whole conversation, it's just, they, you know, it's cold. They have dry lips.
Ken, imagine if we took a class freshman year at Penn State and they taught us this, dude. It would have changed the entire trajectory of our lives, I believe.
I don't know if I could handle this kind of power. I don't know if I can leverage this kind of responsibility. I would probably psychologically forget everything I learned because it's too much, man. I don't want to know.
It's the same reason
you don't have
any mirrors in your house, isn't it?
What's that?
Kenny, it's the same reason KJ doesn't have any mirrors in his house. He just doesn't want to see what he's working with.
Good point.
Don't pull that curtain back.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss, man.
That's right.
But I want to know how the sausage is made. Shelly, who can benefit from your services?
Anybody who works with clients, really. But also I do a lot of work in pharma and medical device. And so I go in and train folks and companies, not only on this stuff, but just how to move in those environments. Because as you can imagine, corporate environments are really tough. And so you need every trick in the book that you can get to move up the ladder.
So I nodded my head slowly and Joe nodded his head real fast when you were talking there. So does that mean we're out of time, Joe?
I'm just fast, dude. I intake the information a lot quicker, you know?
No.
I'm quick on the uptake.
But Shelly, this go ahead.
I was just gonna probably say what you're about to say is, you know, this information that is invaluable, and you know, any business out there, any organization, I think could really benefit from Shelly. And you know, it's not just for sales, but for life. Just be a better listener. I think it'll help in your personal relationships, it'll help in your business relationships, sales, everything. Just understanding how to better communicate and listen, you know, with your eyes and your ears. And this was great. We're really glad to have you on, and I learned a lot. I don't know about you, Ken. I think this was one of our better guests.
No doubt. I was super excited. Super excited to have Shelly on. And Shelly, I'm even happier now after having gone through the conversation that we did so. So you're welcome to come back. We have another show. We'll be sure to let you know. And should we plug Money Matters TV? Money Matters TV, if you're in the Philadelphia area, 11 o'clock a.m. Wednesdays on channel, I don't know, like 6007. Watch Money Matters TV, where this week the host is Shelly and the co-host is Ken Jordan. So who knows, maybe we'll get an extra viewer out of it.
Yeah, that would be great. Nice.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap up here. Thank you again, Shelly. Joe, as always, thank you. Until next time, we'll catch up.
Thanks for listening to Selling the Dream. We know you don't want to miss a single episode, so go subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. And then make sure to share the show with your friends and leave us a review.